Good morning. Today is Thursday, June the 10th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County's very own District Attorney, Maggie Fleming. Good morning. Are you ready for our question for this morning?
Absolutely.
Okay. Why are special days called red letter days?
Ooh. Is this where I get to call a friend?
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say there must have been some, I don't know. I give up.
This one.
I mean, I don't want to say it's like the scarlet letter because that would be the wrong, the wrong direction for this.
Right. The expression comes from the custom in the Christian church of showing special days in red letters on the church calendars. It's believed that red letters were first used in the Book of Common Prayer in the Church of England.
Wow.
Very, very tame. Nothing truly exciting on that one.
And still I didn't get it.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes the low-hanging fruit is so low that you don't see it, right?
That's right. Kinda that's like, right. Thanks, Brian.
Like picking blackberries. You know, sometimes we just miss the ones that are down at the ankles.
Yep.
Oh. Well, recently, I guess in the last couple of days or so, the fella that was charged with the assault on Jeff Pauley was found not competent to stand trial. I think that's the proper phraseology.
Right. That actually happened a little while ago, but I, you know, I know that the news recently covered it. But that's correct. We had him charged very close in time to when it happened, and then, you know, very, very quickly afterwards, the court found that he was incompetent.
Which that's logical.
We have a date, right. So we have a date for his status, February 28th of 2022. But if he regains competency before that, then they'll notice us and he'll be brought back to court.
So what is... I think logically, most of us would go, yeah, anybody that does that's going to be crazy. Duh. But obviously, I think the legal standing is and legal definitions are a little bit different than what normal passing by outside the legal system would go, yeah, okay, that person, it wasn't all there. What is the determination? How do they find that out?
So the big distinction that we always have to make, Brian, is that it's actually two separate issues. One is, are you competent to understand the nature of the criminal proceedings? And that's where we're at now. The not guilty by reason of insanity is a completely different standard, and that can come up at any point in time. But the competency issue is the one we have to address first in order for someone to even be put through the process. So that's where we are with him. And sadly, we've seen a real increase in these in the last 5 to 10 years. So we see a lot of sort of both of these components happening. So we have someone that we just try to have regain competency so they can proceed, but then ultimately they're going to be found not guilty by reason of insanity. So I guess the best way to think about it is competency is right now in this moment, versus not guilty has to do with what your mental state was at the time of the crime. So you can have people who are not guilty by insanity at the time they commit the crime, but by the time they get to court, they understand the proceedings, they know what's going on, and they can go through a criminal process, a trial, but then still be found not guilty by reason of insanity.
So for folks that are committing crimes, but they're, I guess, in a different dimension. They're on they're being impacted by drugs or the meths and LSDs and things like that. Is that kind of where that came from? Do those people qualify, or because they voluntarily took the drugs, does that waive or impact that determination?
So the use of drugs definitely affects people's mental state. What we typically see is once the drugs are out of their system, they become much more mentally aware. And so if it's simply drug abuse, within a few weeks, they've regained sort of the status that we think of as, mentally aware, such that we can proceed with the case. What's interesting is we had the Department of State Hospitals director come speak to the group of elected DAs, and we were all talking about seeing this incredible increase. I mean, it's quite significant how much more we're seeing this. And we were inquiring, you know, if they sort of had any data. I think for many of us, we were questioning how much of it was being influenced by the increase of drug use. And what the director was saying was that if it was simply that, they would not be seeing the rates they see at the state hospital, because most people have, the drugs have cleared out of their system by the time they reach there, you know, because they start at our local jails, they're found incompetent, they get shipped off to Napa or wherever. And so they do not think that it is simply drug-fueled. They think it's an increase in the mental health issues that are much more prevalent now in our society.
So what would be that? Drug babies?
Well,
if it's a genetic defect, I mean, that's a whole different level of issue.
So what's interesting is, the woman was very good about explaining, she didn't have, necessarily a study that determined the results, but that the data they had been sort of anecdotally and informally checking on was that what they saw was once a lot of the social services were discontinued, during different budget times, that really impacted a lot of people significantly, because the community-based social services were sort of their safety net. So when people were starting to have some issues, they had this ability to, check in and get some services.
Kind of intervene, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Well, we'll pick it up from there. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It is 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, before the break, you were talking about the cutbacks in some of the state social services, and that might be, or it's considered that could be an influence or a cause to the increase of the numbers of people who are showing up at your doorstep but are qualifying as not being competent to stand trial. What were some of the thoughts that the presenter had?
So one of the issues that psychiatrists and psychologists, sort of talk about is that when people have a mental illness break, the length of time they stay sort of in that stage impacts the ability in the future for them to recover more quickly. So in essence, it's a lot like physical injuries. The more it happens, the worse it can be, and then the harder it is to recover. And so what they're seeing is that for those individuals that maybe over the last couple of decades would have been able to quickly get services or perhaps even had social workers. I mean, that's one thing that we have found is having someone have a social worker, it's their shepherd. It's the person who says, don't forget, Wednesday, you got to go in for your shot. Don't forget, it's somebody who's checking in with them and making sure they stay on track.
It's a parental role.
Go ahead, Brian, I'm sorry.
A parental role.
Well, it can be, but for a lot of people, in their 40s or 50s, it's a counselor. It's someone who assists them with maintaining normal life. It's something that I saw very, very true with the public guardian caseload when I was with county council.
Having
someone who checks in with you and says, you know, remember we were going to go to the grocery store today, let's get going, and kind of motivating this person to stay on track, really, I mean, it's the same with a lot of other illness issues, you know, sometimes people need that. And that loss, you know, has really impacted the general population. So during the break, I pulled up the statistics that I was trying to remember. And what we know nationwide is 4% of the general population has a serious mental illness. But they make up 17% of those people incarcerated. And then what they believe is that roughly 72% of those with a serious mental illness have some other issue, such as a substance abuse problem. So when I was looking at the incompetency rates, what I found, and this was back when I did the study of our local cases, 2014 we had 80. So 80 times, you know, when we were in a criminal proceeding, it got stopped because the person was incompetent to continue and, you know, they had to, we had to stop the proceedings until they could regain competency. 2015, that number was 138. 2016, it was 178. And by 2017, it was 223. So that's a huge jump that we're seeing in our, and I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but that's pretty staggering. And as you can imagine, those delays, you know, if they're staying at our jail, they're decompensating, and that's why our jail has brought in, you know, sort of their jail-based competency program to try to help those individuals. But it also means their cases come to a screeching halt, and they get sent off, and like the example we started with, that person, our next status date is 8 months from now. You know, that's not good for the victims. That's not good for anyone. So it's a really serious issue that we need to try to resolve.
It's interesting that number is that high. I'm thinking of the graduating seniors this week out of Pica High School in California. Right. So this study or this perspective is indicating that 4% of every graduating class right now has some serious mental issues, or is it something that, I mean, we could say junior high school, I guess, because, you know, some of the drug experimentation in high school, of the junior high school kids that are going into the high school, that 4% of all of those youngsters already have got serious mental issues, or is the serious mental issue something that's brought on during the aging process or during the experimentation process of growing up?
So those are all really good, you know, sort of questions, Brian. The first one is, I don't know that it's, you know, when we say 4% nationwide, you know, I don't know that we would ever look at a small group and say 4% of this group, you know, because it really is nationwide data point. The second part is, one area that we know is very true is that some mental illnesses do have onsets later in life. So there's, you know, it's pretty unusual for some of the mental illnesses to be observed in younger adults. It's something we see typically, you know, 20s or later.
But it's in there.
It's in there. But, you know, one of the areas that I find fascinating that sort of, you know, psychiatrists talk about is that you can have this. Again, I think of it like mental illness is very, very similar to physical illness in many ways, in that you can have that component, but it requires perhaps another event to occur for it to happen. So sort of like, you know, people can potentially have, you know,
a triggering DNA event
for a physical illness, but it never occurs in them.
Right,
and
right.
It's true with mental illnesses. And this is one of the issues that they're really trying with younger and younger younger and younger children in schools, is teaching them empathy and how to observe when other people are having a hard time to reach out.
And because, coping skills also, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And they have found that is, you know, because one of the areas that they talk about is with school shootings, when the population is asked, almost every student says, oh yeah, I figured that guy was going
to
go.
We'll take it from there when we come back. It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming. Maggie, before the break, there was some comment about triggering events. You know, we all have triggering events in our life that are positive, that are challenging, that change our point of view and our perspectives. That's just part of life experience. But for these folks that we're talking about that then move into the competency-related issues. Is it just coping skills that aren't understood or employed by these folks, and they reach out to other things, and then it starts the snowball effect? Or it just kind of is intriguing how you've seen this kind of a threefold increase here in Humboldt County in 10 or 15 years of the numbers of people that aren't able to handle whatever it is that they're not able to handle.
Right. And it is interesting. I mean, I do, it goes back to sort of, obviously there's got to be more medical research done on it, but that question of, is it that it's always there? It's just how, what stressful event might then sort of set that person down in a downward spiral. So I know that we've seen cases, where people have not been involved in any sort of substance use or abuse. It was their personal life that changed so dramatically that caused them to go into a very, very serious, sort of.
Well, depression is one thing.
Depression, but then to have it become a mental illness. And then cross the line for
criminal. I mean, everybody has their ups and downs, okay, and their blue periods and things of that nature. But
right.
To cross the line, to do damage to something or someone?
Right. Yeah. And that's, it's really sad. It's sometimes we see it's interesting because, of course, this is part of that whole what choices are we going to make here in this office, right? And so frequently the violence is within a family. And after the police are called and the person's arrested, then we get the phone call saying, please, we really don't want this person to be at the jail. We've arranged for them to go into this treatment program. Will you consider this? And we sort of have to evaluate how dangerous that person might be in the community. Is it a locked facility treatment program? These sorts of questions that we have to sort of analyze. I know recently I said to the parents who were calling, I can't agree to this unless you promise me, and we'll arrange it with the jail, that you are here to pick them up and take them directly there, because we're not going to let this person out because of the concern of their mental state and the public safety risk. But sort of trying to figure out what's really the best program. Right now in California, we have a mental illness diversion. So if someone is committing crimes, but it's because they're mentally ill, the case can be basically suspended while they receive treatment. And for some, the courts, our judges are saying, okay, that seems fine. But for some, they say, we're not sure this is appropriate because of the dangerousness of this individual. And that's always sort of the difficult part of all of our jobs. You know, it's not just looking at this moment in time and what this person's doing right now, but in a sense, you're trying to predict what might they do next, because that would obviously affect what the consequence for the current crime should be.
Well, let's use an example, and perhaps you can't comment on it, but you know, there's one fellow in Eureka that's going around breaking windows.
Yes.
Over and over.
Over.
Damage is significant. Certainly the impact of the businesses, I mean, if it's just the hassle factor, is huge. The insurance company, it's huge. The glaziers, obviously it's a huge impact for them too. Okay, somebody acting like that, okay, mental defect, yeah. Impact, well, I don't know. It's probably a sliding scale. But is that something that can be changed, or is that something that's kind of like an arsonist where there's just a predilection and that's where they get their jollies, so to speak?
And that's exactly it, Brian. Many times criminal conduct to the average person, they think, well, that person's got to have a mental issue. But in fact, there are some, and I'm not commenting on that individual, obviously.
Right.
But there are those individuals who are just chronic vandals. They, you know, this is what they do. Sort of like, you know, people who are chronic car thieves or something else. They don't really get anything out of it, but they keep doing it over and over and over. So it's that's also part of, you know, the process of trying to figure out, is this someone who really has a mental illness? Or are they saying that because they hope to avoid the consequences of criminal court and, you know, say, sure, I'll go over here and do a program if that'll get me out of the responsibility for my conduct.
Yeah, the gamesmanship is always a concern that's in there. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Maggie, with some of these, I guess, disturbing figures with the state and national, for those who qualify as not being competent during a criminal situation or are impaired, I guess would be the simplest way to say it, to one extent or another. Is there any familial connections? You know, do they come from single-parent families? Do they come from, recent immigrants? Do they come from this socioeconomic class? I know with some of the types of criminal activity, there's a big no on that stuff. But for the mental side, you know, the parents get divorced. Those types of things, those certainly could be triggering events either for the parents or for the kids themselves, but are those the things that are identified that kind of start the ball rolling?
So I would say I don't have sort of the background social information to necessarily make any, you know, sort of draw any inferences or be able to answer that. But I will say what we know here in Humboldt County is we have very high numbers of adverse childhood experiences. That in general, that number can really significantly affect people's mental health. I mean, it makes people more inclined to suffer depression, suffer mental illness. It makes people, obviously have more significant issues with all facets of their life and suffer from depression and mental illness. So in Humboldt County, as well as Mendocino County, we're sadly off the charts for California as far as the number of people who have four or more. I think we're somewhere above 30% of our population has four or more adverse childhood experiences, which does include things such as loss of a parent, divorce, substance abuse in the home, incarceration of parents, those sorts of factors, abuse.
So it really builds. These are all things that build on themselves intergenerationally, too.
That's correct.
So with the numbers that you had referenced earlier for the county, the threefold increase, are those cases or situations that were adjudicated in Humboldt County, or are those Humboldt County folks that grew up here rather than those that the transients and those that have relocated here numbers?
Again, I don't have the number for that. Those are the cases that are proceeding in Humboldt Superior Court. Whether or not those people are, born and raised here, or people are here for crimes, I don't know. But those were our numbers. And I should say too, Brian, we're looking at cases. In some cases, that could be the same person who had two or three. So they might be, incompetent when they were arrested in January, and then we would see another incompetency case in May when they got rearrested. But still, that would be true of the first number, and then we're seeing a significant increase.
Right, yeah, the frequent flyer program, so to
right,
speak.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, and that's that. Does mental health or DHHS climb into these numbers and try to figure this stuff out and give you this information, or is this a data pool that you kind of have to try to extrapolate from in between trying cases and doing all the DA stuff that you do?
The latter. So these are the numbers that I'm looking at based on criminal cases. Now, we do have, obviously, overlap with DHHS because those are the sort of the mental health counselors that some of these individuals ultimately see, particularly now with the mental health diversion program. They are, seeing some of these individuals and, again, trying to provide them with the services that hopefully will allow them to not only regain, and have a much better life, but hopefully we won't see them anymore in the criminal justice system.
Right. Is there an awful lot of recidivism by this profile of individual?
Yes, because and this is sort of that issue that we've always thought about with our process. If people aren't, well, first off, we don't offer services, but even if we do offer services, if people don't participate, they have no way to sort of break their own cycle. So, you see someone who maybe at the jail starts to do a little better, they plead guilty, they get sentenced, they're back out on the streets, they go back to their old lifestyle, they start to have the same issues affecting their ability to maintain their sanity and behave appropriately, and then they're back at the jail. So part of all of the programs that we're seeing, in the last couple of years is really trying to address that cycle. And one of the ways we're trying to address it is to get to these people earlier. So looking at who are the people we see regularly at the emergency rooms, who are the people we see regularly, at the jail, that are just sort of the chronic people that we know if maybe we could alter their life, we might have an impact that would improve it.
Now, legally, who's able to get that involved with the ACLU and some of the other rights organizations that seem to be out there pushing that you can't do that, you can't do this? There must be some kind of a limitation.
Well, it's voluntary. That is the limitation. So it's similar to the MIST program in Eureka. And that is that if a social worker is with the law enforcement officer and every time they contact this person, they bring up, hey, we think we have a bed for you. Are you interested this time? It may not work the first four times, but maybe it's the fifth time where that person says, yeah, I'm ready to do that now.
So just doggedness sometimes wins. Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Well, hey, hopefully the rest of your day will be a little bit more uplifting than the first hour.
Thank you, Brian. I hope the same for you.
All right. Enjoy your weekend, Maggie. See everybody tomorrow.